Willkommen beim Podcast der Yacht, Europas größtem Segelmagazin. Hier geht's um Boote, Segelpraxis, Menschen und Abenteuer. Um alles, was ihr über das schönste Hobby der Welt wissen müsst. Segeln für die Ohren.
Vor unserer Haustür lagert eine riesige Schatztruhe, die Ostsee. Die ist nämlich ein Schiffsfriedhof mit bis zu 100.000 noch unerforschten Wracks. Der Fotograf Jonas Dahm aus Schweden hat mehrere tausend Tauchgänge hinter sich, um im Rahmen einer schwedischen Tauchexpedition am Meeresgrund unfassbar spektakuläre Entdeckungen zu machen. Wir führen diesen Podcast heute mal auf Englisch durch. Schreibt uns bitte in die Kommentare, ob das okay für euch ist oder doch eher nervt. Ihr könnt das auch an podcast@yacht.de schreiben. Generell freuen wir uns natürlich über Feedback, damit wir jedes Mal ein bisschen besser werden können. Okay, now we switch into English. Jonas, first of all, welcome to our Yacht Sailing Podcast.
Thank you.
When I imagine your job underwater in 50 meters depth or more in a 300-year-old wreck, I imagine it to be very spooky. What's it like?
It's kind of a time travel.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating to see a shipwreck which is so old and still remains so intact.
I can imagine, when I look at your pictures, that these boats kind of still look like they used to look 300 years ago, because the Baltic Sea preserves them so well, and also we don't have these worms that eat wood in the Baltic Sea. Is it really, when you go down there, an atmosphere where you imagine how it could have been 300 years ago?
Absolutely. The main proportion of the wrecks is still standing upright, and some even with the mast still standing. And some of the wrecks has been damaged by trawlers, fishing boats, and so on.
Oh, with their nets and everything?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do these wrecks only now come into public focus? Because they've been down there for hundreds of years, but why didn't people have big expeditions like yours now before?
I think it's because most of them is very, very, very far out in the Baltic. And as you know, Baltic is a very big, big inland sea. So it's kind of expensive to travel that far out. And it's a lot of the wrecks is not known. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you get the money from then? Because this is a very, very expensive hobby, which turned out to be your job. Where do you get the money from?
Yeah, it's from a foundation, which is called the Voice of the Ocean. And it's led by Carl Douglas.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's how we... And we have known each other for like 25, 30 years.
Yeah. For those who don't know Carl Douglas, he's a historian.
Yeah.
And he's very famous in the English-speaking world.
Yeah.
Do you have this foundation to find out more about the history of these wrecks?
Yeah, it's three main focus points of the foundation. One is a more scientific one, and one is for history and trying to connect explain the humans' contact with the sea and how they interact. And the third section is about about the condition of the Baltic and the sea and more marine biology.
For those who listen to us, if you want to Google, try to find Geisterschiffe, and you will find so many great pictures from Jonas, and it's just amazing to see how you take these pictures. Underwater in 50 meters, you don't have much light left. So how do you do that?
Well, we actually got light down there, but we use long shutter speeds and tripods, but not on all pictures. That's the main thing. And if you use long shutter speeds, the light will fall on the sensors and the camera sees it as it is more light than what it is.
Yeah, so that's like on land. It's the same principle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but some pictures you've taken with a wreck and a diver next to it. So, and that only works when it's not too far down, right?
Yeah, it works, but you can set up lighting, very strong LED lights, above the wreck, and you can kind of manipulate the light. So we have, sometimes we have very, very many lights, down there.
Yeah, but you don't manipulate that much. You leave everything as it is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You would never like take a vase, like a beautiful old Chinese vase, which would be very, very precious. You would never take that away.
No. And sometimes we, if we see a nice, if I see a nice picture and it's a bit of wood that's kind of in the way and it's not too big, I can move that just to get the picture of the subject. But we don't destroy anything or manipulate the pictures in that way. No.
Yeah. But sometimes you find or you see like old watches or porcelain or things like that. What happens with that? You just leave it down there because it's like a cemetery.
Yeah. We only take photos.
Let's try to imagine to go down with you. Can you kind of describe what's it like to go down, let's say, to 50 meters, you see a wreck and you go into the wreck. What's it like? I imagine it to be spooky.
Yeah, no, it's not spooky. I mean, if I started to do this when I was 40 years old, but I started diving when I was quite young, and you know, I kind of took it in small steps and learned how to go into the wrecks and then to find my way out. So I've done it since I was very, very young. So, and when you've done it so often and you take it step by step, then it's not so spooky.
Okay. If you see a wreck, you get closer to the wreck and then you see, oh, I could go inside, and you go inside. How does that feel?
It's like a time capsule. Some of the cabins and some of the rooms that you, cabins and stuff that you enter is, it's a feeling that you, I mean, no one has been there since the boat sank. And mostly it's steamships, old steamships that we enter. And yeah, it's a very powerful feeling when you're the first human to see it for 100 years. So
yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you go down and you find bodies. I mean, what's left of bodies then?
Yeah, it's not that often.
But it does happen.
It does happen. You can see some the big bones which remains, and sometimes you can see a skull. But it's very, very rare. Often it's a thick layer of mud and silt on the floors, so very much is hidden in that in that.
I assume you, as a professional diver, you've been all over the world. Is the Baltic Sea something very special? Is it very different to other seas?
Yeah, I think so, because it's the wrecks is extremely preserved. They are in a remarkably good condition. And the Baltic Sea is very cold to dive in, and it's very dark. So it's not like going to tropical waters.
No, of course.
And that's why a lot of people don't like to go here.
Yeah, and I'm so surprised that many pictures, even when you go down very deep, they seem to be so clear.
Yeah,
is the Baltic a clear sea? Because, you know, I live at the Baltic and I often see that there's many algae and stuff around.
Yeah, it's very strange, because sometimes when we dive in the winter, you can see from the, say from the last 3 weeks we were out, I can be at the bottom and I can see the sun. I can see right up and I saw the waves and the sun. And that's in the wintertime. But in the summertime, it's a lot of algae and stuff. And normally they are in the depth area between the surface and say like 30, 40 meters. And below that, it's very, very good, often very, very good visibility.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you still see fish down there in that depth?
No. The Baltic Sea is in a terrible state.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's very depressing. It's
is there hope?
I don't know. I remember in the 80s when I was diving in the Baltics, and it was fish over. You could see hundreds of cod in one wreck site. But today it's very, very rare to see a fish.
When you dive down and you see these wrecks, you can imagine what the world kind of looked like, at least in those boats, 300, 400 years ago. Can you tell us something about the world back then? What was seamanship back then compared to today? What was nature back then compared to today?
The most striking thing for me is that how the seamen could live on these boats for months. I mean, it's a very, very cramped area that they lived in under very, very poor conditions. They must have been very tough men and women.
Mostly men.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about something about the historical background of these boats?
Yeah, that was some. They had their belongings in there, and they had some spare shoes, and they had some coins, and they had some, you know, clay pipes and stuff like that. And when you see something like that, I mean, it's very personal belongings. And what strikes you is that they were living on board those boats, and that's the real thing. When you see personal belongings, then you understand that it's really like a time capsule.
Yeah, it must make you very humble to see that.
Yeah, and even, I mean, old shipwrecks from the First and the Second War. That's kind of more depressing in a way. Because
so many senseless losses.
Yeah. It's been a lot of wars around the Baltic.
Exactly. And there are like more than 100,000 of those wrecks that still haven't been explored down there. So your job is endless.
Yeah, it's really many wrecks. I don't think I will be able to dive them all, but the big ones, I think. Most of them are dived.
You just came back from a 2-week diving expedition in the Baltic, and now you take some days off. Do you ever get sick of diving?
No. No, I don't. I don't. I mean, I'd rather go diving than working as a firefighter that I did before I started this job. I mean, I worked as a firefighter for nearly 20, 25 years, and I was very glad to switch from that job to diving.
Yeah, you had a tough job, that's for sure. And can you live off your diving job?
I work as it full time.
Okay, so you're employed by that foundation by Carl Douglas.
No, I don't. I'm not employed. I have my own company. They hire me for the diving
and for the pictures. Okay.
Yeah.
When you go down with different divers, is it difficult to communicate to tell one diver, hey, look, maybe you want to go further left so I can take a bigger picture?
I mainly work with one diver. His name is Niklas Adolfsson. And we don't have to communicate that much because we've done so many dives together. And I have a third diver that, Johan, that is with us part-time. So we have done so many dives. So we kind of know what... We have a plan for the
picture or the dive, and then
sometimes we think as one person.
Good. Yeah. Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's ideal. Has it ever gotten dangerous?
Yeah, of course it's dangerous. I mean, humans is not supposed to be on the water. I mean, you can die at 10 meters. So the more you dive, I've made a lot of mistakes, and I try to learn of all the mistakes I've done. It's like training. If you train a lot, you become more secure.
And when you go into the wrecks, do you ever feel uncomfortable?
Really not. Mm-hmm. Because the curiosity and the fascination of what I see takes over. So, but I think it's good to be a little bit afraid and a little bit,
at least have respect.
Yeah, of course. And you have to find your way out and you have to, But the curiosity is really a driving force.
There are so many, especially war vessels, on the ground of the Baltic. And right now there is another war in Ukraine, which is fought with the Russians who face the Baltic Sea. So again, we have a war.
Yeah.
How is that for you?
I think it's kind of sad and depressing because we haven't learned from history. I mean, it's been war after war and we're still not learning. And that is kind of sad, I think.
Have you been into war vessels also?
You've probably seen many dead bodies there. Yeah, of course. I have. Taking pictures of wrecks like that is to make people not forget what's down there. I mean, so let's not forget what has happened. And the only way to do it is to visit those places with respect and take pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sad. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's not necessary.
No.
Yeah.
No. And it really strikes you every time you see a ship like that. I mean, for instance, in the book, it's a shipwreck that is called Cap Grier. And it was in the end of the war and it was bombed by the Russians. And it was hardly a notice in the papers. And 800 people died there.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's really sad.
So also, maybe we can interpret your pictures as anti-war pictures too, to wake people up.
Yeah, kind of. And it can also, I mean, pictures can create a lot of feelings and it can also make young people want to go diving. And when they start diving and maybe they become wreck divers, and when they become wreck divers, they'll be interested in taking photos. And when they'll be interested in taking photos, they will learn more about the history. Then I think I've done a good job, or we have done a good job.
Absolutely.
To preserve the history and what has happened in the past.
Jonas, thank you very much. I would love to see more pictures. I think I have to get the book, Geisterschiffe.
Yeah.
It's amazing what I found on the internet, and it's amazing what you do as a photographer and as a diver and the things you dare to do.
Well, I hope I continue for 10 or 12 years more, and then we become on our way to make a second book. So
it takes so long.
Yeah, it takes so long. It really does. It really does.
How many dives do you need for one phenomenal shot?
Sometimes we set it on the first dive and sometimes we have to come back because the visibility is not good. And then we can return to the same place for 15 times. If it's a really good site and we want that picture, we can go back and go back again and go back again until we get it. Because the visibility in the Baltic is from time to time is very, very different. It's fluctuating.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Well, good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you have great conditions. And,
yeah.
Talk to you in 10 years.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Jonas. Bye.
Das war der Segelpodcast der Yacht. Alle zwei Wochen neu, immer freitags. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, abonniert uns, liked uns, empfehlt uns. Oder schreibt uns an podcast@yacht.de. Und wenn ihr mehr auf die Ohren braucht, klickt unbedingt auf Meilen und Zeilen. Der Abenteuer-Podcast des Delius Klasing Verlags. Nur bei uns gibt's echte Abenteuer direkt ins Ohr.